It's time for What's Up with Steve Abel from the Green Party.
Morena, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Morena, how are you doing?
Yeah, we're good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you both. You have a good break?
Yeah, we did. It was fleeting, but we're back and we're happy to be back.
Rosetta got up to heaps of things and I just kind of chilled around Auckland. So we had quite different holiday experiences. What about yourself?
Yeah, I just stayed at home because I spent 30 weeks of the year in Wellington and I just thought, man, I'd like to just hang out at my home.
Nice
one. So I did that.
Awesome.
Mean. It's very nice of you to make the time for a chat with us because I know things can be a little bit slow getting back into it in the world of politics. The House isn't sitting until the end of the month, is that right?
Yeah, we sit the last week of January, but most of us are kind of doing a bunch of things already in preparation for this year's campaign.
It's a big year ahead. I want to talk about that in a second, but I thought we'd start by talking about earlier this week you were in Northland for the commemoration of the Battle of Ruapikapikapā, which ended 180 years ago. Tell us a little bit about what happened at the event earlier this week and the sort of mood amongst people that gathered.
So Ruapikapika, for those who don't know, was the final battle in the Northern Wars, which began with Honeheke cutting down the flagstaff at Mikey Hill in July 1844. In fact, he cut it down four times, and the final time was in March 1845, which triggered the beginning of the Northern War. And it culminated in this battle at Kororarika, Ruapikapika, the Bat's Nest, which was a battlement built by Kawati, who was the genius engineer who built these fortifications able to withstand British artillery. And this site is particularly poignant because it's an absolutely stunning location. If you haven't visited it, I highly recommend it. And it's one of the most intact sites. You can still see the earthworks, and even after 180 years. And on Sunday, they unveiled 13 new po that have been carved in recent months and years of ancestors and tipuna associated with Ruapikapika. And so we had this powerful dawn ceremony up there on Sunday morning with hundreds of people from across the community. And it was a real honour to be part of that.
It sounds as though the Wairua and the vibes were strong. And what a beautiful way to kick off the year sort of by commemorating the past, eh?
Well, yeah, and I think it's a super useful entry point for understanding Aotearoa history is to look at the New Zealand Wars, and my summer reading has been Voices from the New Zealand Wars by Vincent O'Malley, which pulls out texts from people who were there at the time, including interviews with Honeheke and various of the British regiment and so forth, which gives you a really visceral sense of what it was like and how recent that history is. 180 years seems like a long time ago, but in terms of the span of history, it's relatively recent, and it had a profound impact on what Aotearoa New Zealand is like today, so it's useful for understanding who we are.
When we think about this time of year and Northland, we're often thinking about Waitangi, which is just around the corner. I'm interested as to your thoughts as to whether, you know, commemorating events such as the Battle of Ruapikapika is something that more politicians should be attending.
Yeah, I think it is, and it was good to see there were politicians from across the House. The Greens sort of dominated with myself and Tamata Paul and Huhana Linden, who was essential to organising this. Huhana's deeply involved in the coordinating of the Ruapikapika commemorations. But Shane Jones was there, Minister Goldsmith turned up for the day before. None of them were there on the actual unveiling of the po on the Sunday, but they were there for the Porphyry on the Saturday, and Will Adrian Prime and Adrian Rudafi from the Labour Party were there as well. So it was good that some of the smattering of MPs turned up to those things, but it's good for us to connect into the meaning of that history and how pointed it is for us today. But this government are going against the lessons that we learned from the worst aspects of the colonial era, and undoing our commitment to the treaty and undermining iwi Māori in terms of self-determination.
I want to pivot and chat a little bit about this $75,000 animal welfare program the government announced in just at the end of December. There was a lot of stuff happening in the House at the end of December before the year wrapped up. But this one I was keen to hear your thoughts on. An animal welfare program announced for the sheep shearing industry to set up more sort of online workshops, practical assessments and resources. What's your take on this? Is this adequate for improving animal welfare in the sheep shearing industry?
I guess it's some sort of step in the right direction. And for context, wool is a super important fibre, and it's a genuine solution for the massive plastic dependency that we have in the world for fibres. And, you know, lots of our carpets now are plastic when they would have been wool, and lots of our clothing that used to be wool is now plastic. And plastic is a major problem ecologically. In terms of, you know, pollution of the ocean and the atmosphere, and it's a, you know, toxic substance made by the petroleum industry. So getting to natural fibre use is important. Wool is part of that solution, but if we are to have a wool and fibre sector, those animals that produce that extraordinary super fibre will need to be treated in the most humane possible way and have a good life.
Yeah.
So upholding our animal welfare standards is vital. I think that is understood by the wool industry, and this is some step of acknowledgement. There's a broader problem with animal welfare in this country, is that where there are breaches of our Animal Welfare Act, which is a strong act on paper, it's not sufficiently enforced. So we see animals in miserable conditions during the winter and winter grazing situations, you know, cows up to their udders in mud, and calves being born in that situation. Sheep also suffer those conditions, the winter grazing conditions in Southland, and there's a high mortality of sheep through winter grazing, and lambs. That is not acceptable. Long term, we have to move to being a country that has the most humane treatment of animals if we are to have a viable farming sector that recognises the sentience of animals.
Who is responsible for better enforcing the Animal Welfare Act?
Ministry of Primary Industries is where animal welfare sits, but one of the Green Party policies is actually to take animal welfare out of MPI and make it an independent agency and better resource it, because there's a conflict of interest with the Ministry of Primary Industries, whose job is to promote the interests of the agricultural sector, for them to also be responsible for being the gatekeeper and calling out bad animal welfare practice. There's a bit of a tension there, so we think it would be much more effectively done by an independent animal welfare agency. And we also support them in a commissioner of animals, the same as we have a commissioner for the environment, who actually holds us to account on animal treatment in this country.
It's a really interesting one, because it's been a really intense time for conversations around animal welfare, particularly with the pig farrowing crates. And I'm sort of trying to draw some parallels, perhaps, between how this sheep shearing industry animal welfare program has come out with such a different result. I know that the $75,000 fund will have funds from both MPI as well as like the New Zealand Merino Company and people within the wool industry. So it seems as though having people across the wool industry at the table here is a positive thing, but then at the same time, when you look at the pig farrowing crates, there was a lot of criticism of NZ Pork sort of inside cooperation with Minister Hoggard about how that all sort of played out.
Yeah, that's an excellent example of really bad industry influence on a minister who is actually the portfolio holder for animal welfare. So his first duty is to protect the welfare of animals, but in fact he was behaving like an advocate for the pork industry. putting in place the bare minimum, you know, a 10-year extension of these miserable conditions for mother pigs, spending weeks in these cages where they can't even turn around and they can't build nests. Totally unacceptable, inconsistent with our Animal Welfare Act, which is why it was deemed illegal by the courts in 2020. Mm. The government passed a law under urgency at the end of the year to, you know, make it look like it was okay, make it impossible to convict under the Animal Welfare Act through a trick of legislative action. But yeah, completely different attitude there. And the wool industry, you know, who I've dealt with quite a bit, are genuinely committed to improvements in that space. But you have to really be certain that you're not being compromised by a willingness for an industry to do well and to thrive, and the bare facts of how existence is for animals on the ground. We need an independent animal welfare agency that actually looks at the facts of whether animals are being treated appropriately and, where necessary, prosecutes mistreatment.
I'm hoping that this this sort of positive step for sheep shearing, animal welfare, and a bit more investment in that area might mean that Minister Hoggard has learnt from the the drama of the pig farrowing crates and all the backlash of that. So interesting to see how things will play out throughout the year, and interested to read more about green policy regarding this. Heading into an election year, could you give us a little rundown on the Green Party's priorities at the moment?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, no surprises. We're going to keep battling hard for defence of the environment, making sure we have a viable planet for life on Earth, which means that we don't allow, you know, corporations like the Aussie miners to destroy our landscape for short-term profits, and we wouldn't support the resumption of offshore and gas exploration. So environment's kind of a central pillar for us as the Greens. We also are very committed to upholding our founding agreement, Te Tiriti o Waitangi, as you will hear me say often and frequently, because that is, as Moana Jackson put it, a profound and visionary base upon which to build a country, and we have to make sure that founding agreement is upheld for the good of our whole country and for our cohesion as a nation. I think one place where we will really differentiate ourselves from our other fellows in the opposition, i.e. the Labor Party, is in our genuinely transformational economic policy and green budget and strategy. And we will be taking it to the electorate that if they want meaningful change in the orthodoxy of neoliberalism of the last 40 years, it needs to be a party vote green, because the Labor Party have made it clear that they're going to tinker with the capital gains tax, but they're not going to seriously change the landscape of how economics is done in this country. In our kind of green budget and fiscal strategy, we've made it clear that we will change the way that we do the debt-to-GDP ratio in New Zealand, move more to what European countries do, which is have a slightly higher debt-to-GDP ratio. We will also have a proper wealth tax, which will only impact 1% of the population. 91% of New Zealanders will pay less tax under Green Party policy than they currently do. And our wealth tax policy and our fiscal strategy will raise $88 billion over 4 years, whereas Labor's capital gains tax will raise $2.8 billion over 4 years. Mm. So that gives you a sense of the real, you know, differentiation on the left between a vote Green or a vote Labor.
Mm. Thank you so much for your time this morning, Steve. That's all we've got time for, but lovely to chat, and you have a great rest of your week.
Yeah, you too.
Ka kite.
Talk soon. Ka kite.
That was What's Up with Steve Abel from the Green Party.